Hello and welcome to Coda Radio. This is May 26th. I have a great talk with Paul from the legendary independent Mac development studio Rogue Amoeba. They make a number of great audio tools that you probably use. I personally use Piezo. You probably use them if you're on Mac, right? And if you're like an old geezer like me. But they've been around forever. A lot of good stuff in here, of course, about the recent Apple legal troubles and the wrath of Judge Yvonne Rogers. Since we have recorded this, a few things have developed. One, Fortnite, which of course caused all the trouble via their, you know, its controlling studio Epic Games, is back in the iOS store. Apple is being forced to, quite begrudgingly, allowing alternative payments and all that good stuff. We talk about that quite a bit. We also talk about what it's like to be an indie developer in 2025. Some of the maybe disappointments, at least on my side, with the state of the iPad. And, you know, just where things are going for indies. So, yeah, a little Apple-centric this week, but I think it's a good conversation. And Paul is always brilliant. He's been doing this since, you know, since most of us were little kids, even maybe before then. So if you're not in the Discord, there's a link in the show notes. Get in the Discord. A lot of good stuff in there. A lot of people helping each other find jobs, helping each other with projects, etc. If you are, you know, at a company that needs development work, reach out to me at alice.dev. In particular, if you have old Fox Pro data, we have now an ETL extension for Alice that can handle Fox Pro. So that's great. Otherwise, enjoy the chat and curious what your guys' thoughts on this whole Apple thing is. Clearly, I think you're going to get from this that I think this is a step in the right direction. Enjoy. All right. Well, welcoming Paul Kafasis from the legendary, the venerable, much like the good monk Bede, Rogue Amoeba. Paul, how are you?
I'm all right. How about you, Michael?
I'm very well. So for folks who don't know, tell us a little bit about Rogue Amoeba and you and kind of your role there.
Well, I mean, if we're legendary, everybody should know, but
I think they should.
I'm not sure we quite live up to that, but we're a Mac audio software company that's been around for, what are we at, 22 plus years now?
Wow.
Making consumer level and prosumer level audio products for the Mac.
Very cool. Yeah, I actually routinely use your Piezo app on my Mac. Very good audio stuff. I know you have, I think your big one's Airfoil, right?
So the biggest two products right now are probably Audio Hijack and Sound Source.
Okay. Cool.
Airfoil was one that it's a tool for streaming audio around the house, but that is one that probably had its heyday a few years back. And now a lot of people are streaming more from their phones. So
makes sense.
We've sort of shifted some resources and focus towards Audio Hijack, which is our flagship recording app. And then Sound Source is our tool for just audio control on the Mac, doing all sorts of things like adjusting volumes for specific applications or adjusting outputs for specific applications, adding audio effects to any audio on your Mac. So those are the Audio Hijack and Sound Source are probably the two that I tell people, oh, check this one out if you're interested.
Awesome. So I guess the burning question is, what is Mac development like in the year of our Lord 2025?
Let's see. Well, so it's May right now, and the Apple Developers Conference is next month, is just about 4 weeks away. So whatever I say now is potentially completely out of date then, but within a month. But I don't know. We've been going strong for over two decades, and we've weathered a whole lot of changes. What is Mac development in 2025? It is interesting in that it is still a growing environment for us. We still have a growing user base that, you know, the iPhone and the iPad have not taken people away to the extent that maybe would have been thought a few years back. The Mac continues to develop, continues to grow. And what are we at, 40 plus years now?
Nice.
Mac OS in general, and then Mac OS 10 is, you know, over 20 years old. So it's something where it's still cutting edge for us, and there's still constant updates. And like I said, there's a developers conference next month where there will almost certainly be macOS 16. So it's, for us, it's still home. It's still enjoyable. I don't know. What is there something more specific I should touch on here?
No, that's a great answer. I mean, so stack-wise, we're talking purely native Mac apps. We're talking Swift, mm-hmm. Objective-C.
So yeah, Objective-C from dating way back, and then more recently we're doing more with Swift. So yeah, it's all native. It's we're not using Electron or any other frameworks like that.
And that gives you a huge advantage, right? You have full system access, full system resources.
I think it's certainly an advantage in terms of providing an experience to users that is what they should expect. I use a couple Electron apps on my app. I've got Slack open right now that's an Electron app and it's fine, but it is certainly not an app where I say, oh, this is a great Mac app. Its benefit is that it's everywhere. It's on my phone. It's on my iPad. It's on all my Macs. It's on the web if I need it to be. But in terms of providing a top-notch experience, I think, yeah, doing things native is certainly the optimal way to do things on the Mac.
Nice. Are you partial to, I guess the obvious question is, obviously there's different ways to do your UI stack on Mac. Are you guys using traditional, I call them nibs still, that tell you?
Yeah. Interface builder has not been around for quite a while, but yeah. Yeah.
Missed, I mean, fondly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everything there is, so we have a full-time designer who does great work. But the most interesting, there's an interesting thing about Mac development, Apple development in general, is Apple has a huge library of icon resources, which is something that provides a standard across the platform, across the platforms, I should say, across the Mac and across iOS. So we're doing a lot with SF Symbols. That is their icon resource.
Yep.
And so when we do something with, say a share button, it looks the same as it does in many other Mac apps. And that consistency is helpful for users. So that's something that Apple released within the past few years and is interesting and notable on the Mac, just in terms of something that we do with development, that this is something that we can do and helps users of all apps. So yeah, our interfaces are certainly designed to fit in on the Mac and use resources on the Mac that hopefully make things straightforward for users.
Awesome. So is there anything, I mean, 22 years is a long time, right?
It
for,
is.
For an indie dev shop. Is there anything, any particular theme in terms of how Apple approaches the platform that you can kind of pull out from your guys' 22 years of experience?
Well, so I don't think there's anything that's been consistent over that time. So early on, I sort of have these phases in my mind of that 22 years. Early on, the Mac, this is 2002, the Mac was, Mac OS 10 was brand new, and many people were still on Mac OS 9, and the iPod had just come out. So we had this window where the Mac was exciting. The iPhone wasn't here yet. The Mac was exciting, but it was not hugely popular. Mm. And so our first couple of years, we were very small. We only had the three founders of the company, and we had these tools that let you record audio, did various audio tasks. But it was something where everyone on the platform, or most users on the platform, were really psyched to find new tools, find new products, because there was so little there as things got started. And then, the iPhone came out, and the next few years were very focused on that for Apple, for a lot of people. And I think it's swung back in the past 5 to 10 years, where people said, you know what, the iPhone is great. I use the iPhone every day. The iPad is pretty good. I use that frequently enough. But when I want to do real computing, when I want to do real tasks, the promise of, oh, you can just do, you'll be able to do all this on your iPad, you'll be able to do all this on your iPhone, that hasn't come true. And I don't know that it will ever come true. I'm not sure that it makes sense. So I think the idea that the Mac is the computing platform, the, sort of power user platform, is something that we've thought for 20 years, 20 plus years, but there's been sort of a shift away from, and maybe a shift back to that, where people have said, you know what, it's nice to have a keyboard. It's nice to have a lot of ports where I can plug my microphone into and plug my power into and plug my headphones into. So yeah, I think that's something that's been interesting over 20 plus years is to see this shift to a new platform, Mac OS X, which then grew over time, and then see people shift away, at least in terms of mind share, in terms of where people want to be using a device, towards the iPhone and the iPad, and then sort of coming back and realizing, you know what, it's nice to have powerful hardware that can allow me to do a lot more. The Mac is, you know, so much more open than the iPad, than the iPhone. Mm. So when you want to cobble together a solution, you can do it on the Mac in a way that you can't on those other platforms. And for us, that's, I said earlier, the Mac has been home for us for this whole time. And it's been, you know, a tool that I've been using for decades. And so it's nice to see that that is still the case for users, that that is the place that they can get things done.
Yeah, it's an interesting time too to think about, particularly iOS, right? With just Apple's unbelievably bad luck in court recently.
I don't know if it's bad luck, but bad outcomes in terms of those cases. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say if you're that, I mean, it's a little off topic, but if you're that executive, the finance executive who a sitting judge was like, oh, and I'm referring you to for criminal contempt, it's just a bad place.
Absolutely.
When we spoke a few years ago, you'll remember I was a frustrated iOS developer because my dream of large-scale iPad apps keep running into, well, Apple doesn't want you to do stuff like that.
Limitations of the OS, absolutely.
Right, and it's not you know, performance limitations or hardware limitations. In fact, I would argue if Apple would maybe like have a martini and calm down, you could make the iPad a basically default productivity tool for most what we would call like office workers, knowledge workers, whatever. But the billing stuff, which I have mixed feelings on and seems to be rapidly changing despite Apple's kicking and screaming.
Yes, absolutely.
I actually think that's the smaller issue. It's the easier one to like put on CNBC because it's, you know, math is easy, right? 30% of $1,000 is not hard to figure out. Just the like, here's an API, but you can't use it like this. And by the way,
it doesn't do everything you think it will. And
right. Oh, and we reserve the right to decide. This is the one that got me, that your implementation, while it works, is not what we intended. So sorry. The other side, I think, where the Mac has it, and I'm curious where you kind of would feel about this. I hate iOS code citing. I think,
okay,
particularly because I tend to work for enterprises doing either consulting or building custom applications. There is no reason to deploy a suite of iPads that I have to go through this ridiculous process when it's just an internal application. I see the argument, and I tend to agree with it for like public facing apps, right?
Sure.
You know, my mom downloading something, or you know, regular Joe's. But if you're, I don't know, insert right the DoD, for example, which is a project I did where we ended up moving away from the iPad because the frustration level of code signing was getting ridiculous. Because, you know, they break. I mean,
absolutely.
Having to know each iPad serial number for a stupid stupid provisioning profile
just to get the software on there.
Right, is a ridiculous limitation, and it bogged us down that it was easier just to port over to the Surface. Because you know what Windows doesn't care about? Anything at all. It's complete nihilism. It's great.
Right.
I'm a little facetious there, but I'm curious because your software is all very high-end, beautiful, but also professional tools, right? They're not toys. They're not games. They're not, you know, Pinterest, post your... like I made shrimp scampi for breakfast this morning because I'm a weirdo. It's not like an app like that where you'd post that. Do you feel that, well, you've obviously chosen to focus on the Mac. Is the code signing and some of the policy stuff why you still prefer to focus on the Mac, or is that really non-factor?
No, there's definitely, well, so I mean, code signing is on the Mac as well, and it's enough of a hassle that we...
It's not quite as bad. I mean, you don't need to know each individual Mac's serial number.
Well, right, so that's what I was saying earlier, that the Mac is so much more open than iOS and iPadOS, and this is one of the ways that is true, is that, yeah, we can when we're testing our own software, we can just not worry about code signing at all. And when we're distributing software, it's, you know, relatively straightforward as long as Apple's code signing servers are up, which every once in a while they're not, and then not no one can ship software at all.
Yes.
But setting those issues aside, it's relatively straightforward. And we are, all of our stuff is distributed directly from our website. Visit us at macaudio.com. But the app stores are certainly a little more locked down, and we have shied away from those on the Mac. All the app stores are locked down, and the Mac app store is relatively locked down. But the difference is that on the Mac, it is optional, whereas on iOS and iPadOS, for the most part, setting aside some of these court cases, setting aside the EU, it is pretty much not optional. You have to be in the app store, and therefore you're dealing with all this code signing and all these headaches. And so definitely just the headaches of the oversight that Apple has implemented on iOS and to some extent on the Mac, but avoidable on the Mac, is something that has been discouraging for us to do much on those platforms. But I think it's certainly more than just code signing. It's policies where you were talking about it earlier, that if you build something and it needs to ship through the App Store, Apple can always just say, you know what, we don't want that. And that is not a good way to run a business. If you have to build something, hope that it gets approved, and then come to find out, no, it doesn't. You know, no, it's not approved. Well, you just lost all that investment that you made, and where do you go from there? On the Mac, we always have the relief valve, the safety valve of, we can just ship this ourselves and not have to worry if Apple likes it or not.
Exactly. And with things like Stripe and Gumroad, it's just not that hard to put up your own storefront. Yeah.
And it really hasn't been for... Apple has been claiming that it's been difficult for years, but it 20 years ago when we started, 22 years ago when we started, we were selling direct via a payment processor online, and it was pretty straightforward, and it's gotten easier since then.
Totally. Yeah. I sometimes, and again, I say this as someone who was very inspired by Apple. I got my first MacBook. It was at like saving up, aspirational for me, right? Kind of situation. I think about, you know, Steve Wozniak in particular. I know everybody goes with Jobs, but Jobs is an interesting figure in a lot of ways, but not this one. Woz would have hated the iOS.
and does. I mean,
he's openly just like it's kind of, it's the anti, which is sad because, again, my hobby horse, dollar for dollar, an iPad Air is probably the best enterprise tablet you can buy.
Until you have to run software on it.
Right. Until you are an enterprise and want custom software, which I hate to break it to folks, but you guys all need custom software. So that's why I'm in business for going on, I don't even know how many years now. So all right, we should let this go. It's evolving so quickly. As we're on the air right now, which today is the 15th of May, they just started putting up nasty warnings for folks in the EU because
they're not doing the in-app purchases. Yeah,
right. The warnings are, it's like something you would get, you know, on Drano, like, don't drink this because you'll die. It's like you just got like slapped twice by a federal judge. The EU keeps fining you, and I have a young son. And you know how little kids get. Sometimes they're just willful in their defiance, right? They're just, no, I'm stealing the cookie, man. And I'm taking that cookie. I know you saw me, and I'm going to do it again.
And you feel this is a similar reaction?
I think it's crazy. I mean, I understand that, you know, Uncle Tim has to put up a fight because, you know, chart has to go up and to the right.
Yep.
But you lost the fight. Just admit that you lost. Say, hey, this judge wants to throw one of our guys in jail. We should probably apologize and just drop all this bullshit. Instead, they seem to just keep insisting. I'll do one more because this is the one that gets me. The way they define remote code execution is the most lawyered bullshit I have seen in a very long time. So what is remote code execution in your mind?
Code that's running on a server, most likely.
Hey, there you go, right? Or how about like doing a git pull into your app, I guess could be considered.
Sure.
I'm like, but it's not actually executing remotely. They define it as any code that is not theirs. Right.
Okay.
So yeah, just, you gotta, you have to, these two platforms, which share the same lineage,
yep,
have become so wildly different in terms of philosophy. And I would just ask you this. You know, there's been a couple attempts by Apple to make the Mac more like iOS. And I think most of those features, like the Mac App Store isn't doing great, never has.
Right.
Launchpad, I think is what they call it. I don't really know anyone who uses that. So
I don't. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Terminal, right? That's my happy place. I live in Terminal and code editors all the time. And that, hell, that's Wozniak's back, right? That's the Apple II right there. That's the good old days. So I just struggle with, you know, I think Rogue Amoeba could tomorrow write some kick-ass, frankly, podcasting audio tools, right? Get me a better soundboard that I can just run on a little iPad mini. It'd probably be great. Yep. Hook it to my Mac, right? But I don't know that it would be worth it for you.
No, the thing that you said is key, is that the philosophy of these two platforms seems to be so different. And the philosophy of the Mac when it started was, this is an open platform, you can install whatever software you want. And Apple has certainly locked things down for security purposes because these devices are so full of important information.
Yeah, and some of it's reasonable. Yeah.
Some of it is absolutely reasonable and some of it is perhaps too far, but they have not done the one thing that we have long been terrified of, remain terrified of, but it hopefully will never happen, which is require all software on the Mac to come from the App Store. And just that one difference is so key because it means that you have this relief valve of, you have an idea that Apple doesn't like, tough luck for Apple. You can still distribute it and people can still install it. And if they find it useful, it will likely earn you money. If you have an idea that Apple doesn't like iOS, you're just completely out of luck. I mean, setting aside jailbreaking, which is pretty fairly dead at this point.
And
yeah. I mean, it's not a way that we are interested to run a business. No. We don't feel that iPadOS and iOS are welcoming platforms for the things that we want to do. And so again, we've focused on the Mac. We're a small enough company that we say, well, we've got plenty of work to do on the Mac. The Mac still brings in revenue. Mac brings in plenty of revenue for us. So we're not feeling like we're missing anything by not being on that platform. But we think that there is absolutely an opportunity for better software to be there if the platform allowed for it. So I think the world, not just from us, I don't mean to say that boastfully, but the world in general is missing lots of great things on the iPad and on the iPhone that it's very difficult to say, hey, I know you love that device, but it could be so much better, but we can't demonstrate it because Apple won't even let us show you how it could be better. And it's, to me, as you said, it boils down to the philosophy of, this is a locked down platform. We control what gets on this platform. That's the iPhone and the iPad. Or, you know, because the genie was already out of the bottle when this idea came about in the mid-2000s of an app store, we can't do that and we don't do that. And yes, we'd love it if everybody just went to the Mac App Store, but because there's so much software outside of the store, it's impossible to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, all right, so one last question till the, you know, last question. Second to last, I guess, would be a much smarter way to say that.
Penultimate.
Ooh, I love it. See, this is why you guys have been around 22 years. It's that kind of quality and polish. So do you think there's any chance that we get a reinvigoration of the WAS spirit and we go back, particularly, I would even concede that maybe the iPhone should be locked down, mm-hmm, but the iPad, I see no justification, right?
Well, is there any chance? Yes. Is there a good chance? I mean, right now, finance controls Apple. I mean...
the Bozo Brigade. Remember that? Remember that speech?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, it's very difficult to argue with the results of, you know, the past 10 to 15 to 20 years for Apple.
That's fair.
One of the biggest, depending on the day, the biggest company in the world, you know, multi-trillion dollar valuation. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, Apple's screwing everything up. It's all terrible.
No, they're not. The hardware is great. I mean,
The hardware is great. The earnings are great. You know, Wall Street loves it. But yeah, as a user, do I want my platforms to be more open? Do I want to be able to install software on my iPad that Apple doesn't, you know, necessarily want me to? Yes, absolutely. So do we get back to that? I don't know. I mean, like I said, my hope is that the Mac continues to be as open as it is. Does the iPad and the iPhone ever get there? I guess the best way seems to be what's happening in Europe, where alternate app stores need to be permitted.
Sure.
I mean, the legal avenue to say, hey, these platforms are so fundamental that you don't get to have that level of control anymore. You are a $1 trillion company, and that's great for you, but you need to release some of the control and say, okay, if you want to install something else, maybe we put up some scare sheets that discourage you from doing it, but it at least needs to be possible. I think that is a more likely way that it comes about than for someone inside of Apple to say, the way Woz did 40 years ago, this should, you know, we should have a terminal here, we should have access. Right. It should be hardware hackable.
Let me print the spec to the hardware and put it in the box. Yeah.
And share it out. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a lot less likely than that they have their hand forced. And as you said earlier, you know, they're being dragged kicking and screaming even as these decisions come out. I really wish, I mean, as every one of these has come out, I've thought, okay, maybe now someone at Apple says, you know what? We had a great run of having this walled garden, completely walled garden, and it worked out really well, but now let's free things up a little bit, and 95% of people won't ever touch this.
The Candy Crush rails aren't going anywhere, right?
Exactly. I mean, your store is still going to be a great way to download software. It's a couple taps. It's a great way to pay for things with a couple taps. It's not as if the whole thing would fall apart if you could install some software from an alternate app store. But the way Apple is going about it is that any, you know, giving a single inch would wreck everything. And I don't know. My hope is that somebody can say, you know what, we've done it, and now we can open this up. But I don't know who that would be inside of Apple.
No, not inside of Apple. So you got to think, if you're Apple's lead attorney, I forgot the guy's name, but the one who got his butt handed to him just now. I think the first thing you do is book a meeting with Uncle Tim and say, so this Judge Yvonne Rogers lady is going to rip our hearts out if we ever appear in her courtroom again. We need to just cut the bullshit, stop trying to, you know, and that's what they're doing, right? I don't know how closely you followed it. There was a meeting where it was Schiller, right? Phil Schiller.
Yes, right.
We should probably just do what the judge has ordered us to
do
and not try to play games with her. And they're like, it was the finance guys, just like you pointed out, who were like, nah, man, we got to get to 27% so it doesn't make sense for anybody to not use our system.
Well, like, and there actually maybe is your answer. You're saying the lawyer, but also Schiller is somebody who
was there in the beginning.
Yep. He's old guard. He's been there for decades. And in this case, came out looking good because he was saying, hey, why don't we just go along with this? So maybe that is the person in a high enough position to be able to say enough. Let's open this back up the way that the laws want us to, and the way that we can still survive. So, I mean, like I said, I don't have a lot of hope for this, but every time one of these cases comes down where Apple loses, I think maybe this is the time when they realize, let's do a reset and let's fix this.
So I've been doing the show for, I think it's 13 years now. We've covered the Google Oracle case. We've covered a bunch of the weird Microsoft stuff that occasionally came up. Most hilariously, them getting sued by, I think, a German metro company because of the name Metro or something. It was like trains.
Okay, I don't think I even know that one, but okay.
Yeah, Microsoft needs to check trademarks. I have never, and we followed them pretty closely here, had one scene of one in the tech world where a sitting judge from the bench is like, I am going to try to have you thrown in jail.
Oh, yeah, excoriating. Yeah.
Right.
That decision was scalding. You know, the language in there was just incredible because she was so mad about what Apple had done.
Well, she felt, I would say, it seems that she feels, right, not psychic, of course, but based on her written ruling and her verbal, I would call it ass kicking.
Yeah,
she feels that they willfully defied her orders, which
I think
they
so,
did. Yeah. I mean, that's just the case. Although, rolling back a little bit, and I know we're going a little over time. You know, that used to be less bad on the iOS. The enterprise certificates,
right,
were great. And then I guess Cydia and some other alternative stores found a way to abuse them. And Apple's solution wasn't, hey, let's try to like
fix First that of all, hole.
Also, like, how many jailbroken iOS devices that were people who were ever going to spend money in the App Store?
It's a very good question. I mean, right. Yeah. I don't know.
But enterprise certificates were pretty good because you could say, okay, we're an enterprise. Assume we know what we're doing. This is our weird custom software that we need. And yeah, we'll do some obnoxious provisioning profile stuff still, but not quite as bad. And they just had no qualms about it. I think it was only a week or 2 weeks when they realized that it was one of the European alternative stores before Europe insisted that they like bless them.
Be permitted, right?
Right. They freaked out and just shut that whole thing down. Wild. It's just so their actions. I mean, they're always swinging Thor's hammer.
Right.
I don't know. This is my hobby horse, right? Because it's such a powerful platform, the iPad in particular.
But it's getting nerfed and in a way that you can't take advantage of that. Yeah,
exactly. And I see the things you guys are doing. I don't know if you remember. I'm sure you do remember Black Pixel. I don't. Fortunately, they're not really around anymore that much. But they did try, by the way, to go iOS. And that I don't know that worked super well.
No, exactly.
For the reasons I think we've been discussing. And it's just such a damn shame because that generation of indie Mac software shop should have been able to make this transition and not like transition totally away, but do both.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Say this is, you know, this is Piezo and this is your mobile version of it if you need it on the go.
Yep.
Make it a package deal. I can think of a million ways you could make that a good business. And the answer is, I mean, Piezo, you probably could, although some of the stuff you do, no, that definitely wouldn't work on iOS. Never mind. It's just right, just there. It's just crazy. Okay. Namaste. There we go. We're done. So the last question, Paul, on a much, much more upbeat note. What is one tool you can't live without? Can be anything. The only negative stipulation is it cannot be something you make.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's fine. Ooh, one tool. I mean, the longest running tool I have on my Mac is called Launch Bar. You mentioned Launch Pad, which is the OS app launcher. Launch Bar started out on Next OS, I believe. I believe it's definitely that old and it's been on Mac OS 10 from the beginning. But Launch Bar is a tool for launching apps, but then so much more. So I hit Command Space on my keyboard and I can get text snippets. I can launch apps. I can launch files. I can do calculations.
Oh, nice.
So Launch Bar, there's several apps of this type.
Yeah, I have Alfred. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep,
that's yep. So it's Launch Bar just has a longer lineage than Alfred, but an app like that is probably one of the most frequently used tools on my Mac and has been for 30 years.
That's amazing. That's an amazing
pick. So that's the one.
All right. Well, Paul, great having you on. I'd love to have you on again, see what you guys are cooking up. And yeah, have a great day, man.
Thank you. Good to talk to you, Michael.
Good to talk to you.